It's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
Candia Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Vibach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Larrabee is in winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelt.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at hummingbirdridgewinery.com. My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that. I'm just a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Waltz, vineyard with an S, don't forget the F.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive, P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you, Buster. Well, they're happy tonight. And Mike is gone and getting our guest tonight. Our guest tonight is Doug Seitz. Doug Seitz is the winemaker for 5 wineries in Tennessee. We're going to visit with him. He's the one that was supposed to be on a couple weeks ago, and he says his bad. He takes classes every Thursday evening, and he had forgotten. We email back and forth, and I call people and all that. That's how I schedule the guests, and And he said he had forgotten and didn't reschedule his class. So because of that, he's got his reschedule tonight, and he made arrangements for his class so he can be on with us. And actually, he's in the green room ready for us to bring him on to the show. So hello, Doug. Are you with us out there?
I am with you.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight. I understand that you rearranged your class so you can spend some time with us. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, no problem at all, man. I'll get beat up less this way, I hope.
Yeah, it is a karate class. We have to point that out, too. It's not just like, you know, you're not a teacher in a class and all the students beat you up. It's
no, all right. Yeah, all right. We're hardcore in there. We get really physical. So, yeah, this is nice.
I was just saying before you came on, you are the winemaker at 5 wineries?
Yeah, yes, I am, and it's good because I'm schizophrenic, so it works out well.
So the 5 wineries, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mountain Valley Winery, Apple Barn Winery, Hillside Winery, Sugarland Winery, and Eagle Springs Winery. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is them.
All right, very good. And I also understand that you make different wines at each one of them.
Yeah, we do, and that's kind of the challenge, is making each winery different and distinct from the others. You know, it starts with the product line, obviously. You know, you don't want to go, you're not going to make your 5th winery very popular if it tastes just like the wine you have at the 3rd one.
Right.
So that's kind of the trick, you know, making different varieties of grape wines, different fruit wines. All right, so just trying to keep them all distinct and different. And thus far, we've managed to do that fairly well, I think. But the general managers, each store has a different general manager, and so they kind of inject their personality into the store and into the tasting room staff. So it's really, that's where a lot of the distinction comes in, then, is the personalities of the tasting room staff, really, as much as it is about the wine.
I just pulled up Mountain Valley Winery here, the first one. I noticed you make a bubbly. You really expand yourself out quite a bit, and even including some effervescent wines there.
Right, yeah. Our production, actually, for the effervescent wines is headquartered out of Hillside Winery, but we do produce some for our other stores. We'll occasionally feature a sparkling wine at one location or another. You know, we kind of add some diversity again to the product line at each property, and it's important too to be able to offer these different kinds of things to your customers. You know, because let's face it, you know, I mean, if you go to the same restaurant, you know, same time you go visit town each week or each month, whatever, and all they've got is the same stuff on the menu, you're going to get kind of bored. So,
yeah,
you know, so we just try and change it up, you know, stuff on the menu. And, you know, now that we've been doing that way for a few years now, people come in and they'll ask what's new because they know most likely we're going to have something different that they didn't have the last time they were there. You know, seasonal specials and just some oddities we'll throw in once in a while. And
wow,
it's helpful, too, to the tasting room staff. They're not left serving the same wines all the time. They can change their story a little bit from time to time.
So each of the 5 wineries, you're changing the wines on those. When you change them, do you change them among themselves or just a new wine for that winery?
Yeah, well, pretty much it'll be exclusively available at one winery. You know, like I said, we try and inject these seasonal items in there. I can use the Apple Barn as a good example, I think, probably for that. For example, you know, we made a apple cranberry wine to be released during the holidays, and it performed really well, and it ended up becoming a permanent resident in the product line out there, which you kind of like it. It's successful, but at the same time, too, you're like, well, really? You know, I don't want to make it all the time now, but... you know, the general managers usually get their way. So, then, you know, during the summer, then we offer an apple pomegranate wine. And, you know, so we get some variation in there and you know, different things for people to try. And, you know, we do like a blueberry or rather a blackberry port style wine that's available there during like the later summer and in the early fall. And, you know, we'll try and throw them a bubbly wine at some point during the year. It could be, we got a sparkling apple mango that we're working on getting through the TTB right now. And, you know, an apple. Well, it's the Applewood Farmhouses right next to us. It's this restaurant, and they're somewhat famous for their apple julep. And so we've kind of engineered that into a wine. And so, again, we're working that one through formulations with TTV right now, too. So that takes a lot to get working through the TTV, if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, well, I did a couple of programs on the TTB, so our listeners are aware of them, too. So,
yeah, they did a couple programs on me.
Yeah, they tend to do that. Well, do you are you in charge of all the fermentations? I mean, do you jump from one winery to the next and check on it, or do you have yourself competent, good minions?
Oh, yeah, it's all about the minions. I mean, it's really less about me and more about them. Yeah, that's what makes it all possible, really. I mean, you know, not just their capabilities to be winemakers and wine producers, but also their creativity to generate, you know, some new ideas and, you know, just keep the springs fresh. So, you know, everybody contributes on all levels, really. It's just, if it doesn't work out, it's my fault. It's basically my job.
So no matter what they do, the buck stops with you then. That's really what happens.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I always thought I was at the top of the hill at some point, but no, I'm down there at the bottom.
You're at the bottom.
Kind of weird how it works. I didn't think it was supposed to be like this when you was the chief winemaker. I thought it was supposed to be more fun, but
so it's
definitely the people I got working with me. You know, particularly Lori Herway, she's our enologist, and, you know, really takes care of things, you know, more geared towards lab work and record keeping. And then Rich Kidd, who is actually would not recognize him by that name, but we call him Shaggy. And he's kind of our more operations and cellar work and stuff like that. But they're both, you know, competent winemakers in their own right. They're really second to nobody.
They jump around to all the wineries themselves and do the lab and all that?
Yeah, Lori more so. She pretty much goes to all five locations, and Shag pretty much is between the Hillside Winery and the Apple Barn. You know, because the Apple Barn's got its specialities there, primarily, you know, in producing and fermenting the apple wines there. And he's also gotten more involved over at Hillside Winery, which is where we produce most of our grape wines and a portion of our fruit wines as well. So he's diversifying his portfolio.
It's interesting that you would have, you know, five wineries like that. I've never heard that. We've talked to wineries around this country, and I've never heard of a situation where you have a crew that covers five wineries with five different list of wines. That just how did that come about? Why?
Well, I don't think anybody planned it. I think it's just the way it happened. Well, you know, originally Don Collier, who is my employer, and he's the principal owner of some of them, but you know how laws and ownership and everything, and it gets all weird. And I'm not going to try and explain the business model because I just don't get it, quite frankly. But originally, he started Mountain Valley Winery back in 1991, and I think it was about 3 years later, the fellas just down the street at the Apple Barn had some space available for lease or whatever, and they approached Don and said, you know, we think about putting a winery in here at this location. You think you can work with us? So, you know, they come out and they cut whatever deal it is that they've made, and then they had the Apple Barn, and that opened in 1992. I think was the year it opened, or maybe it was 94. Either way, it wasn't long after. And then, so we had the two wineries, and I remember the guy I used to work with back in the day there. He said, once you have a second winery, you almost have to have two, which sounds silly, but it's true, because then you have to stock both places, and you're always borrowing filter sheets or corks or something from the other one. So we like not having printed material. And so that was kind of the nature of the business for a long period of time. And then in 2008, he said, well, you know, we're making an awful lot of wine here. You know, our facility is insufficient to continue to produce the amount of wines that, you know, need to be provided for those two locations. So So he thought, well, the best business option is to make a larger winery. Instead of adding on to the existing one, he thought it would be best to have another sales outlet, which is wise and true, in fact. So
right.
We built another winery, bigger, and that would be Hillside Winery. And, you know, I mean, it's outfitted, you know, with larger tanks. You know, we got like 4,500-gallon tanks. It's got a 70-hectoliter press. I mean, so just a bigger operation. I mean, we can really gear, you know, we can run 20 tons of grapes through there in the morning pretty easily.
Wow.
Right. So like I said, so we geared up, and then we got the sparkling wine thing going and all this other stuff. So that made sense. And then, about 2 years after we opened Hillside Winery, Don was approached by some investors up there in the Gatlinburg area and said, hey, you know what? We've got this property here we're redeveloping, and, you know, we're interested in the wine business. It seems like, you know, something we'd be interested in doing. Can you work something out with us? So I'm kind of thinking maybe he just can't say no, but... Seriously, unless it's me. Well, actually, no, he's very good to me. I shouldn't say that. He's been extremely easy to work with. You know, if I think we need to something to make life better or improve our quality, he's very easy to work with. And so he does not mind investing more money in our portion of his operations. So anyhow, these guys said, well, let's open up a facility up here. And Don said, well, okay. You know, so they worked out their deal. And that was the birth of Sugarlands Winery, which was about a year and a half ago. And then, kind of like on the tail end of that recession there, some property at the interstate became available, and it was just an offer he couldn't refuse. And that's when we opened Eagle Springs Winery. So, like I said, just various opportunities kind of came up, and we just kept going and growing. And, you know, it's kind of neat. In particular, after the third winery opened up, I said, hey, Don, you got your own wine trail now. And he said, ooh, wine trail.
Yeah.
So that's just his style. It's like, yeah, you know, some people might have a winery. He goes, I got a wine trail. That's kind of how they all happened. And each winery opened up, you know, he just said, here, Doug, come up with a product line for us. And, you know, we kind of went off of that, so. It's fun. I mean, it's very challenging, but it's also a lot of fun. You get to make all these different wines, but then again, you have to make all these different wines.
Right. I was just, while you were talking there, I had all the wineries pulled up here so I can just flip on them. And I noticed that the Hillside has a lot of sparkling wines, or, you know, bubblies.
Right.
I mean, is that by choice?
Yeah, that's kind of our niche for Hillside Winery, is these sparkling wines that gives them their point of distinction versus the other properties, because the Apple Barn is apple. You know, Mountain Valley is more traditional. We tend to consider them more German, French kind of wines. And,
wow.
You know, then the Hillside Winery is the sparkling wines and generally like an Italian style. Is sort of what we go for over there. And, yeah, it kind of killed me. We used to call our sparkling wines Frizzantes, but since they're technically carbonated wines, well, you know, the TTB says you can't call it Frizzante.
Right.
I thought was fascinating, because I'm like, how many people even know what the heck Frizzante means? But, you know, so we had to change the name. But you can call it Spumante, and that's not misleading. I mean, that just seems weird. But
I don't.
You know, yeah, I'm not sure how these things get to be laws sometimes, but the, you know, some of the investigating agents were like, he goes, you know, I mean, a lot of this stuff, you know, was written into law as part of the repeal of prohibition.
Right.
So yeah, they are weird. He goes, but a lot of people just said, well, it's got to be this way. If we're going to repeal prohibition, you have to follow these rules. So that was kind of a compromise, and that's how we ended up with this stuff. It'd be nice to update it, but who knows? Maybe we're better off just sticking with it the way it is.
Yeah, I know. Because they started updating it, then everybody would have to start changing everything again. So, yeah.
Right. And then they're going to want, you know, all that, like, allergen information, and then you're going to have like nutritional information on your labels and all that stuff. I mean, those things may be forthcoming anyway, but you know, it's not going to make anybody's life easier, that's for sure.
They've been talking about that. In fact, we brought it up on the program a few times here about the nutritional labels on there, and we're coming up with more questions than we are answers to that. So,
yeah, I don't like the idea at all.
I don't either. I think it's absurd, but we are the small people. We're not the ones who make the final rules.
Sure.
I'm asking this question simply because a couple of years ago I was out in California at a very large winery out there, and one of the biggest ones in the country. And I was talking to the winemaker, and I was asking him a few questions, and he informed me that he spends over 90% of his time doing paperwork for the government and TTB and all that. Do you find yourself stuck in the same situation, or do you have people who are doing that for you, or what's the word?
Yeah, well, how much time I should be spending doing that and how much I actually do that is different things. I did a reasonably good job, I'd say, keeping up on our compliance necessities, I guess, probably until around the time we opened Sugarlands Winery. And then things just got a little out of whack, and then that's when the TTB attacked. But I shouldn't say attacked. Really, they got the job to do, you know, and really they're very decent people to work with. I mean, you know, that's their job, and, you know, I don't really like it, but they could certainly make my life miserable if they really wanted to. But
First
thought, they're a little more friendly maybe than on the next one, I guess. But, yeah, I really should spend more time on it. But no, paper's not my thing, and this is a good reason why I work for somebody else. Because if I ran the business, I'd likely run it out of business. There's just some things I can do, lots of stuff, but I don't think operating a business and, you know, you give me a piece of paper, I'll make you a crane or a lily or something. I'm probably not going to like turn an invoice in on time though.
So basically, you have other people that are keeping that paperwork up to date for you so you can continue doing what you do.
That's our new theory now, yeah. Like I said, Lori kind of oversees the record keeping and, you know, does, you know, each property has a cellar master that's kind of responsible for the data entry, you know, and so far as our cellar records go. And so Lori has to herd all those cats into that. And then anything that goes for label and formulary compliance or, you know, issues along those lines is still on my desk at this time. But on July 1st, we're adding an administrative hand on the production side of the house here. So a lot of this invoicing, ordering, inventory, all that kind of stuff is going to be out of my hands, and I won't have to call and spend time with vendors, and they won't have to try and track me down and send me invoices and get me to pay stuff and all that. So I'm looking forward to being a winemaker again. It's kind of gotten off course here over the last few years, and I'm looking forward to being back in the cellar more and getting my hands dirty again.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what happens too. That paperwork overpowers. I mean, we've talked to a lot of people, and that's always a comment that we hear, is that the paperwork that's required is just getting more and more and more, and it giving them less and less time to do what they want to do or what they're looking at doing. So
it is, and, you know, in particular with purchasing, you know, it's really inefficient. It's not a very good, I don't think it's a good idea in general for winemakers to probably be in charge of purchasing stuff, because, you know, usually we all want a good deal on everything, but that's not, you know, we're not wired for that thing inherently. I mean, you know, we're kind of artists and sort of like scientists and everything.
Right.
You know, obviously I'm painting with a fairly broad brush here. I'm just going anecdotally from a lot of people that I know. It's like, those aren't the things they want to fool with. They want to make the wine, they want to craft. You know, it's like any other trade, like being a carpenter. you know, you don't sign up and go to trade school, you know, to be an electrician, and then you realize, well, you know what, I'm going to have to order the wire for these things, these pipes, and, you know, I've got to replace broken tools and hire new people and train them. And, you know, those are the things nobody thinks about when they get into it. And then you realize,
right.
Oh, well, you know, my life was really, but it's just growing pains. I mean, you know, you're just going to have to work through it and manage it yourself and till you get to a point you can hire somebody else to do the stuff you don't like.
And
or in my
July
case,
1st, you're
then
doing
I'm at
that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, finally. Woo! Happy day.
The government, you've mentioned TTB and how much. How about the state government? Do you have any hassles with them?
Not yet. No.
Well, not that you should, but,
well,
I mean, you know.
Yeah, they're... You know, they'll have an ABC agent from the state will come by annually and essentially just wants to make sure you've got your, you know, your license hanging displayed somewhere. You know, somebody comes by from, the boiler inspector, you know, the local fire guy comes by or whatever. Department of Agriculture comes and inspects annually. The FDA shows up every other year. You know, but no, not really. They're very unobtrusive. But the state tax on wine in Tennessee is $1.21 per gallon. So we end up paying a good lot of money to the state of Tennessee in the form of excise tax on our wine. But
yeah.
It's generic, whether it's sparkling, fortified, still, you know, it's all $1.21 a gallon.
Well, that's good. I mean, here in Florida, it's a dollar, I want to say $1.11 a gallon, but anything over 17% jumps up to $1.90-something. So, yeah, it makes a difference there. So if you have a flat rate like that, that's good. It is,
and I like they keep it simple.
Yeah, that's especially if you're making all those sparkling wines and higher alcohols and all that. That makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it's fun when you do as much movement in tax class like we do. Yeah, I mean, we got moving things out. We generally have like three different tax classes at any winery at any given time. There's at least two. So, yeah, that's not much fun. Those cellar reports are difficult to try and keep track of. But again, that's Lori's bit, so God bless her.
You love your minions, I can tell.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
They really make all things possible. So.
What is your education for winemaking?
None, really.
A lot of people are that way. I mean, nothing to be ashamed of. A lot of people don't have any formal education when it comes to it. Then how did you...
Yeah, people are generally surprised. They think, oh, I thought you had to have a degree. I'm like, well, yeah, they like that, but, you know.
Not required.
Yeah, I started when I was 13 years old, really, you know, working at another winery in Tennessee during the summers and whatnot through high school. And that's kind of how I got my beginnings. And so I'm all of 42 now, so that's roughly 29 years I got. You know, not full time, but you know, since I first started making wines, that's very helpful. I had a lot of that experience younger,
yeah.
And of course, just being a hard worker and you know, being enthusiastic and passionate about what you do, it's pretty contagious, you know. And I think most employers or persons that own or operate business. Generally get a pretty good eye for those kinds of things, and if you got those things going for you, you're going to be a commodity, you know, regardless of what it is you're doing or where. So those are kind of inherent things, you know, gifts from your parents, really. You know, they kind of craft you to be the person that you are, so
without
just carry
question.
On with it.
Yeah. Are you do you have any say in the grapes, the growing of them, or the vineyards or anything that is involved with there, or do you just order in and start doing what can be done once you get them in to the to the shed and to the tanks and to the crushers and all that?
Yeah, that's really kind of a sore subject sometimes.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, we had very restrictive laws in the state of Tennessee up until about 3 years ago. Inherently, we're a captive audience. We had to buy all the grapes that were available in the state of Tennessee before we'd be allowed to go out of the state and purchase. We had to apply for waivers through the Tennessee Department of Agriculture, and they would grant you the waivers. And it wasn't difficult to do necessarily, but it was a bit of a pain. And many people got into the business thinking, oh, heck, you know, I can grow this many tons on an acre, and you guys got to buy it. This is great. And they really didn't have any understanding, I should probably say, of growing wine grapes. So really spent almost a generation, you know, of Tennessee wines were made under those rules. And as we're revising, we no longer are under that system. It's not an easy row to hoe, but, the owner, Don Collier, there is pretty adamant that we use, you know, Tennessee products as much as possible. And I think that's a great thing, and I'm all in favor of it. But then again, sometimes I really don't think it's such a good idea.
Right.
But, yeah, it's very hot here in Tennessee, and we got a lot of humidity here in Tennessee. And so the varieties of grapes that we get the most tons of, I'm just not really enthusiastic sometimes about Cynthiana in particular, and Chamberson is another one. But I'm just not really too excited about those varieties.
Really?
Because
Cynthiana or Norton is very popular. I mean, we talked to a lot of wineries, and they love it. They think it's a fantastic grape.
I know. I don't know if it's just me or what, but I'd rather not. Yeah, there's some folks make pretty good product out of them. Like I said, I don't know if it's just me or what, but I just don't care for those varieties. Just over the other side of the mountain there in North Carolina into Virginia, you know, they do some pretty decent wines out of Norton and whatnot, but I've just not been able to find a niche to work its way into our market, really. I've not been successful with it thus far. And as a regard, I end up with a surplus of it. However, we do have are getting better at growing Cabernet in the state of Tennessee, which, you know, I don't think we're probably going to out Cabernet California at any point in time soon. But it's always interesting to see how viticulture progresses. You know, in each state, everybody goes through these same things. You know, they started out with Americans, and eventually they grow hybrids. Then they start growing, like, Cab Franc and stuff like that. And eventually, you know, you end up with Syrah or Shiraz or what have you, and you start growing more exotic grapes, and you're more successful with them until you find your niche thing, you know, like they got Viognier over in Virginia. So we're kind of in that transitional thing now where we're working through the hybrids and into vinifera and trying to kind of find out where our market is going to be in that end of things as far as the bunch grapes go. But my passion is definitely in making muscadine wines. Absolutely. Yeah, that's by definition, that's what we're all about, for sure. Yeah, we processed probably about 130 tons of muscadines last year, which is about 30% of all grapes that we processed. But, you know, that's our thing here. I mean, you know, that's our terroir. You know, a lot of winemakers, I think, like going off about the terroir and the regionality and the soil and the climate and all this stuff and the people. And then they're talking about, well, we have this excellent, you know, Sauv Blanc that we grow here or whatever. I'm like, man, dude, you know, we grow muscadine. That's really what we do here. That's what makes the southeastern United States different than anywhere else in the world.
It is,
It's like, you know, like Nebbiolo, you know, and they make the Barolo and the Barbasco. That is theirs. That's only grown there. You can't call it that somewhere else, you know. And we're the only people in the world who grow and make wine from muscadine. It's indigenous to our area, and I don't know, some people look down their nose at it a lot. I just think that's wrong. I think it's what we're all about, and I think we should. Like, you go to New York. Any winery you walk into in New York, have you tried our Riesling? That's what we do here all of them say that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you're, if you don't have Muscadine in your product line, in my opinion, you're just a winery in the South.
You
but
know,
if
the
you got
thing
Muscadine,
is Muscadine,
well, then you're a Southern winery.
You know, Muscadine, though, is this love-hate thing. I mean, and I've said this before on the program. It's you either love Muscadine or you hate it. Very few people are indifferent about Muscadine. I mean, you know, people try it, and they go, ooh, and you know, and they just never learn to like it. And then there's you and your people who love it, who think it's, you know, the best thing that you can possibly have. And that's the thing with Muscadine. I mean, it just... It's, you know, there's no indifference about Muscadine. I mean, it's, people are passionate. One way or the other, people are passionate.
Yeah. I mean, I like that about it. And it's there's a lot of different things you can do with it, too. I mean, you know, it makes a nice sparkling wine as well. Semi-sweet to sweet. You know, sweet is certainly more popular in our area, and that's more our market and what we do. And, you know, it's just it's one of them things with winemakers, you know, it's sort of like, you know, we'll spend a lot of time talking about the dry wines that we make and, you know, our barrels and how we cultivate these things and whatnot. And, you know, in reality, that's, you know, what, 3 to 5% of your sales is this one particular wine that, you know, winemakers are really attracted to that you like to bring over to your friend's house. And, you know, it's like your trophy wine. And, you know, that, well, I don't really want to talk about the sweet wine that we make because it's just sort of like embarrassing or something. Like somehow that's less because there's sugar in it. And, I mean, I just don't understand that. It's, well, that's why I have a job. That's why we are able to keep the doors open and people employed is because we make sweeter wines, and that's our niche. We're not going to, you know, cause a revolution anytime soon. You know,
but,
change
you know,
the world, but hey.
Sweet wines out there for everybody, though. I mean, we've talked to a lot of wineries over the years on the program, and every one of them say that. You know, people like sweet wines, and they do. This is what people enjoy. I mean, you know, there are those out there who just the drier the better, but basically the populace of this country, I think, prefers sweeter wines over the drier wines.
It's like anything else, you know. I mean, you know, I got a screwdriver and I got a hammer, you know, each one's got its application, I think. You know, you don't necessarily hammer and screws, but you could. But, you know, you don't necessarily want to drink a sweet wine with steak or what have you. But, you know, everything's got its application and its place. And, you know, I just like the diversity. And, you know, I like the fact that we really do have something in our region that's just ours, really. Nobody else has it anywhere. And that's what makes any wine special, is really that regionality of that terroir that we all like to talk about so much. And I really appreciate
you know,
the Muscadine.
I have to say, too, that you're right. You're absolutely right about this. And whenever anybody talks about Muscadine, it's used, well, like I said, it's a love-hate thing, but a lot of people turn their nose up at it. But it mm-hmm. is something that is distinct for our region, for our country. This is our, well, for the East Coast, basically. This is something
right.
that you're not going to find anywhere else in the world except right along the East Coast of the United States. And you know, and that's good. Thank you, Doug. That's something that's interesting that I've never really looked at in that aspect of it. Because, you know, you hear so many bad things about Muscadine, but it's something that we should embrace because it is unique for us. And so, a good point there.
Yeah, it's, too, we've found that, you know, you can make a nice quality dry wine from Muscadine, too. And, you know, it's like, essentially what we did is we made white Burgundy, you know,
uh-huh.
using Muscadine grapes instead of Chardonnay. Basically the same process. Obviously, you had to chaptalize, but we used, you know, 1/3 new oak barrels, left it surly for about 9 months. And, you know, most of the people in the trade, generally we all do drink dry wines. It just seems to be part of the evolution of your palate is you do gravitate drier. And
right.
there's truth there. So we're trying to think, well, is there some way we can bridge the gap between the sweet wines that our consumers are passionate about and kind of bridge it and say, I wonder if we can make a nice quality dry wine out of these things. And you can. And it doesn't take a whole lot of extra work, but can't call it muscadine because people who drink muscadine want it sweet and people who want dry wine don't want muscadine.
You're right.
It's all in a crack that nobody wanted to buy this thing. They're like, what? It's dry muscadine. It sounds like dry Eve. I don't want that. But it was good, and it really held on for about 5 or 6 years in the bottle. It was quite good.
Wow. And you didn't make it anymore?
Yeah, I've got one brewing right now.
Good.
I would really like to try that. Okay, yeah, we changed the name. We called it the Governor because the grapes are from McMinn County, and McMinn was like the fourth governor of the state of Tennessee, so that's how I got the name for that one. Oh, it's fun. It's really interesting stuff. It was quite impressive, and like I said, it had good ageability to it, so it was kind of neat.
I really would like to try that. I've got your email. I'm going to be in touch with you. We need to talk about getting me a bottle of that.
That'd be cool.
That really does sound interesting. That really does. I'm excited about that. One question. I'm going to jump back here. We've talked about the growers. You said all these growers are doing that. Are the same growers still in the business and doing better, or when they change the laws?
Yeah, they are. They are. And it probably sounds awful like I'm like saying these bad things or what have you, but like I said, they got into this without the understanding of growing wine grapes. I never said it was without the intent of growing a quality product or anything to that effect, but they just didn't really know necessarily when they were getting on board what was going to be required. And the problem ends up being is the price points that we need to be sustainable in viticulture to support the size of farms that grow these grapes.
Right.
They're averaging 2 and 3 acres probably for the most part. We've got about 35 vineyards in about 18 counties of East Tennessee that we work with.
Wow.
And it's very difficult when you're trying to organize the harvest to get groups that are bringing in as little as 300 to 1,000 pounds, and you got, some guys can bring a whole truck of like 5-10 tons, which is decent to work with. But
wow.
It's trying to orchestrate that whole picture becomes complicated, and I guess that's what makes me a little bitter sometimes. Is there traffic control really at harvest season? So it is difficult, but for the most part, everybody's like, we really do want to make this work. And again, I can't emphasize enough the leadership that the owner of our company has in, ensuring the future of Tennessee wines by his support, and buying these grapes, at sometimes, at almost always higher than market price. So it's sustainable for these farmers and these smaller farms to continue to be able to grow their crops. I mean, he's essentially subsidizing a good bit of industry here. So his involvement and his sacrifice can't be underrated. And, these people know this fact. And, they're definitely working on things to make it better, to bring the quality up, to work in their cultural practices better. We got Dr. Lockwood from University of Tennessee. He confers with a lot of the grape growers, and a lot of these guys have been working with a consultant from out of state by the name of Hunter. I can't think of his last name. He's out of Maryland. But, they're really getting serious about it. And, I'm liking to think 2-3 years from now, I think we'll be doing quite well. Just considering where we were at 2 or 3 years ago to today, we're probably seeing about 20% increase in quality, I'd say. A little bit of reduction in the yields. But like I said, these are fair things. Everybody needs to get what they want out of the deal here, and we're sort of working towards that end. And new varieties, we got a huge vineyard opened up near Bristol up here, Reedy Creek Vineyards. And he's really just, Michael Reedy is the fellow's name up there, just a paradigm shift. And this would be an interesting guy to have on your show sometime, probably. I don't know. He's either crazy or he's brilliant, likely some of both. Yeah, he's got a huge vineyard up there, and I mean they're growing. I mean some really really high quality material right there. You know, from to oh, what was this one variety he had that I like so much? Good Lord, I'm not going to come up with. I'm drawing a blank on it. But Syrah, Traminette, Sauvignon Blanc. I mean, he's really just a
wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty impressive setup he's got. But yeah, we've been able to get very nice fruit from up there. Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc. Grr, it's killing me. I ain't thinking of the name of this one. It's a white Spanish varietal. Anyhow, interesting stuff.
What's his name
Muscat,
again?
Michael Reedy. Reedy Creek Vineyards. Yeah, he does a lot of interesting things up there.
I'll email you about the governor, and if you have contact information, I'll try to get him on.
Okay, yeah, like I said, he's a real interesting guy. He's certainly put a huge amount of investment in his property up there. And like I said, these are things that have kind of happened in the last 3 to 5 years has really changed the dynamic in Tennessee wines. And, you know, it's really a new direction and everything. There's reason for a lot of optimism. And I think of most of my contemporaries here in Tennessee, we are entirely at the whim of other grape growers. We don't have our own vineyards, per se. A lot of these other guys have, you know, their own vineyard source, some portion of their fruit, at least from their own place, or some of them are guys who are very close to their location. The way we grow, we keep picking up more growers, and it does not take anything. We have no preconditions to be a grape grower for our wine group.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, bring us your huddled masses. So really, we bring anyone into the fold, and you know, we try and work with them from there. So, yeah, I mean, it can be challenging, but at the same time, you know, this is the owner's vision, and you know, it's my duty to help recognize that vision. And fortunately, it's a shared one, so it's not so oppressive.
Do you? Wait a minute. What was my question? Do you, in the winery, do you promote the fact that it's local grapes, local, you know, Tennessee grapes, all that? Do you let people know what you're doing there?
To some greater or lesser extent, yes. It's the one thing is, it's we don't promote, for example, like you won't walk in there and it's not going to say Tennessee Concord or Tennessee Cabernet Sauvignon, simply because it complicates the compliance process for us, and it doesn't inherently seem to engage our consumers more. We haven't really noticed that we have done that. But I tend to think that when they come to our store, they're there with the expectation that that's what's going to happen. Our tours and our tasting room staff will, you know, explain our principles and how we purchase our fruit, and generally you can say 80% of our grapes are purchased from vineyards within 80 miles of the winery.
Wow.
And that's a fairly safe bet to make. You know, last year, well, maybe not, but that's because, you know, we had a late frost last year and it killed back, so it doesn't work exactly right every year, but that's kind of the story we stick with, and that's true whenever we can make it happen. We buy all the grapes that are brought to us, and, you know, and there's available at one store or another. And, you know, the apple juice we buy, that's not Tennessee product, but, you know, some of the berries are not Tennessee product. We're always looking to be 100% Tennessee. And, you know, it's kind of that same concept. You know, if you're going to be in a band, you know, you got to write your own music. There's no point in, you know, playing songs. No one's going to care. Likewise, if we're not making Tennessee wines, we're making California wines. Who's going to care?
That's true.
Because
a lot of people make California wines already. So if you're in Tennessee, you want Tennessee wines. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, Doug, You're starting to break up a little bit. I don't know if it's your cell phone is acting up or what. So before we lose you completely, if that is a possibility, I don't want you to just leave us. I want to thank you very much for taking the time out tonight. It was fantastic, enjoyable, wonderful, and a lot of fun. Mike, do you have anything you want to ask Doug before we let him go?
I think I'm okay there. I was just going to make a comment from a question. I guess it's a question from MountainValleyWinery.com. You list a wine coolers. They're called Wine Freezer. I never heard of that. Are they? Is that a product from what you're doing, or is that outsourced to a third party type of?
Good Lord, I totally hate and despise those things above all other things God's creation. Yeah, I call them a wine abortion kit, man. I mean, it's just, they're unholy and ungodly, but, most people don't have my religion, I guess.
Yay. Okay. I just never saw that before. I was like, frozen wine, is that what I'm reading, I guess? It looks like it's something you put in the freezer.
It is, Do I really have to talk about those? They're very popular. A lot of people want them. I mean, but yeah, we make wine to be drank. I mean, if you want to put ice cubes in it to make it colder, fine. If it's not sweet enough, you want to put sugar in it, fine. If you want to heat it up in the microwave, fine. You want to mix it with soda pop, I don't care. That's cool. But somehow these things, I can't do it. I just can't.
I think I'd answer that question.
Now ask your general manager about those things, and you'll get a much different answer.
Yeah, I'm sure they sell well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they do.
No, that's it. That's all I have.
All right, well then.
Again. Good. Doug, thank you very much for taking your time out tonight. You missed your class, I'm sure, so you don't get beat up tonight. But
well, it goes for an hour and a half, so I missed the boring part. I'll get in there for the fun stuff now. I'll probably pull a muscle or something since I ain't warmed up.
Really,
that's all right.
I'm going to be in touch with you. We need to talk about the governor and also about Michael Reedy. So I'll be popping up email to you over the next few days. And,
okay, that sounds good.
We'll follow
up. And, if anybody wants to find out about any of our products, you can go to Rocky Top Wine Trail. I guess it's a .com. And they should be able to log on to any of our websites for our wineries from there and view any of our products, et cetera.
Yeah, so yep. Anybody up in that area or anything, by all means, check them out. They bunch them up there and they'll be more than happy. We talked to one of the wineries a couple of weeks ago, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a great area up there, good weather and all that stuff. So everyone who's listening, make a trip up there. Rocky Top Wine Trail anytime. Open year-round, most of them up there. And
Yeah, we're only closed on Christmas Day.
Yeah, so check them out. And thank you, Doug. Appreciate taking the time out, and it was enjoyable. And I will be in touch with you over the next few days.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye now. You was fun.
Yeah, that was very good. Let me put it's RockyTopWineries.com.
No, Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Okay, because I found off the. The website that they have from Mountain Valley Winery. It links to Rocky Top Wineries .com, which is what I'm on. Let me try Trail.
Yeah, Rocky Top Wine Trail is the trail for that. Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Okay. So Wine Trail. Yeah, I know this name. Oh, yeah, it does. It goes to the same place. Actually, if you go to RockyTopWineTrail.com, it takes you to RockyTopWineries.com, and it's the same page, so it's fine.
Oh.
Yeah, it's good.
All right.
I'm just looking at what was linked off of Mountain Valley Winery's website, and man, just closed for Christmas, and that's it. They have special hours on Christmas Eve and Thanksgiving Day. A lot of good information there. And it's cool that they're located within 12 miles of you know, it's like a 12-mile trip, basically, to go through the whole trail. So that's very convenient. Yeah, very
they're
nice.
All right there. And there's other wineries mm-hmm. around there that aren't part of them, too. So, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, there's others reasonably close to them. So if you want to check on any others, there's also some.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting. Very good stuff. So check it out and visit the wineries up there, and it's not too bad. It's a great drive. It's a 441. That's the Smoky Mountain. What's that thing called? Blue Ridge. Is that Blue Ridge Parkway?
Blue Ridge.
Or is that the Smoky
Mountain? Blue Ridge Parkway. Yeah.
Yep. So check it out, and it's a great drive in the mountains, and what a neat area. So very cool. Good guest. Enjoyed it. I've been
yes, he was
sending
it was a lot of fun tonight.
Yep. There you go. You have extra information that you want to get out? You want to?
I'll wait until another time when we have more time. I want to make a comment here. Mike mm-hmm. was up in Georgia a couple of weeks mm-hmm. ago, and he brought back a bottle of wine, Habersham.
Oh yeah.
And mm-hmm. It's 2009 Georgia Merlot. My engineer and I are enjoying this tonight. Nice Merlot, light. Fruity Merlot, got some nice aromas to it, and it's just a very pleasant Merlot, not the heavy, strong Merlots that you might experience from a California Merlot. Obviously, it's Georgia, but very enjoyable. We've been sipping on this during the program, and it is very nice. So, thank you again, Mike.
Well, good.
It is good. So, thank you.
Oh, that's
I just
great.
Want to
well,
give
I'm glad.
You. Give you credit for that there.
it was a good trip. I enjoyed the wineries up there. It's good. And now we're adding more to the list. I'm thinking, 441. It goes through Georgia and through, I still see a road trip at some point. for this show. You
that
never
would
know.
Be, that would be great. Wouldn't it?
Yep. Okay, so we'll save the other information for
we'll
next
save
time.
Okay. Let me see if there's a little one thing I can throw out here. Mm-hmm. Here's something I do want to throw out real fast here. Spirited blends. This is from Bonfun Spirits out of Princeton, New Jersey. They have launched a line of handcrafted blends of premium cognac and young wine. It's been aged together for 5 years in 100-year-old limousine oak barrels. Bonfun Spirits currently are available in red and white varieties and will expand with hibiscus, jasmine, and elderflower wineries in July. A 750-milliliter bottle retails for approximately $29.99. Interesting. That a cognac wine blend with different flavors and stuff in it. So if you see those out there, you want to try something like that, it is Bonfun, B-O-N-F-U-N, out of Princeton, New Jersey. You can check it out at Do You Bonfun, DOYOUBONFUN.com. But I just thought that was interesting, a wine and cognac blend.
That's interesting. Okay. I wrote that down. Blend. Okay. Yeah, very good. All right. I guess we will announce again, it's that weekend that you have a wine fest at Florida State's Winery. That will
be
Saturday, June 22nd, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. And let's see if I can pull the right one up here. Try this one. I'll be right back in about a minute. Hang on.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Wine Fest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at Wine Fest.
That's right, and I haven't seen this name here, unless I just skipped over it last time, but Nicole, a local artist that does handcrafted wine glass art. She will hand sketch anything the customer would like onto their glass while they wait. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, she's new. First time out there. So.
Oh, awesome. That's fantastic. Then you have Bath Planet. I haven't heard of that one either, unless I missed it before.
Nope,
let's see.
New one there also.
That's another one. Whether you choose a tub-shower combo, shower conversion, or walk-in tub, you will be met with quality customer service and satisfaction, the only bath remodeling company to win the prestigious Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. That's Bath Planet of Tampa Bay. Go to bathplanet.com/Tampa. And there's like all kinds of cool stuff this Saturday. And the weather, I believe, let me pull up my weather thingy, it is going to be typical Florida. So
yes, that's the typical Florida. Yeah.
Yes, wear your T-shirt and shorts for the hot weather, and who knows what else could happen. It could snow for all we know, the way it goes sometimes.
You're slicker for the rain,
Yes, just in case. But fantastic. That's Wine Fest this Saturday, June 22nd, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. And then Sunday, it's a busy weekend, you have a wine class, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. That is Sunday, June 23rd. And the wine classes are always enjoyable and informative. 3 hours, you learn a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating of the wines, and sampling, delicious sampling of wines, and a discussion located at the Florida Estates Winery Tasting Room. For more information, you can contact the winery, and we'll give you the phone number in just a bit. Do you still have openings for that particular class, in case anyone out there is?
At the moment, we do. Yeah, it's filling up pretty fast on this one. So.
Yeah. They do go. So definitely, if you're in the area, you want to do that. Call the winery ASAP and get RSVP'd for the class. It's 813-996-2113. Okay. Don't forget tomorrow is the first day of summer.
It is.
Wow.
It is.
Finally, we'll get into some warm weather. My gosh, these 90-degree temperatures.
Some
yes.
The way the jackets, it's summer.
Yeah, that's right. 90 degrees. We're looking for warmer weather. Great. Let's see. The tip jar for this month is for the American Red Cross for Moore, Oklahoma. So you want to stop by the winery at any time during, obviously, regular business hours, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily. Put a little something in the tip jar. All right. That's for the American Red Cross for Moore, Oklahoma. And there's a lot going on. You want to stop by and check it out and definitely do the wine tasting and taste some world-class wines. It's fantastic. And Wine Fest this weekend and wine class. So do it. Do it.
Do it
now.
Do
yes.
One quick thing here before I forget.
Yes.
Let me interject here. A couple of weeks ago, we did a real estate section like we do every couple of 3 weeks. And I talked about a 40-acre, 15-acre vineyard, cash flow positive, tasting room equipment, all that stuff, and three-bedroom house, peaceful setting. But I didn't know where I was. I said, I'll find out. So I contacted the realtor, and he contacted me, and he said that he represents wineries, vineyards, acreage, all that stuff, in the foothills, in the western foothills in California, up so Sacramento, basically east to the border of California. That's his area, and so this winery was in the foothills. And as a footnote to this, I'm going to get a hold of him, see if we can't get him on like once a month to tell us about what's available in wineries in that area. That could be fun. So I'll see if we can contact him and get him part of the program like once a month, coming on and talk to us for a few minutes. So
yeah, but very
that
cool.
Is in the foothills there. So I wanted to follow up on that before I forgot it, and it's done. So.
All right, very good. Yep, so hopefully a future guest for the program, maybe a regular thing. We'll have a real estate section and go from there.
Yeah,
cool.
That might be fun.
It's it is 8:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time when we'll go ahead and end the show for this week. We'll see you all next Thursday.
Tennessee,
down as far as
hopefully,
Tennessee
we're going to try to continue. I've still got about 20 wineries in Tennessee I still want to get in touch with, if we get a response from any of them. Also, if we can get a hold of Michael Reedy, the vineyardist that Doug was just telling us about, we'll try to get him scheduled in the future. And also, we are looking at a program in the future here about fracking. That is hydraulic fracturing and the effects that it will possibly have on vineyards around the country. And a lot of information I'm finding on that. And we'll tell you, if you don't know what fracking is or hydraulic fracturing, I'll explain it to you. We'll talk about the effects on vineyards and all that. Should be a fun program on that and very informative. I'm amazed and shocked at the information I'm finding out. So
good.
Stay tuned. Yeah. We'll keep you posted what's coming up on that stuff.
Very cool. And don't forget, if you are in the wine industry, a wine enthusiast, wine maker, like we just had Doug on, or a winery owner, vineyard owner, somehow associated with the industry, and you want to be on the program, be sure to contact us at any time by email. It's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. I believe that's repeated on the ending. And even if you're in one of the states, because we are going alphabetical, and we're on the T's already in Tennessee, but if you're in one of the other states that we covered possibly already, and we didn't get you on the program and you want to be on the program, contact us. We can always take a departure from that and get back on there, cover another state. Because we didn't really start having guests, Alaska, Alabama, I guess, was one of the ones that came back on my list, but the A's.
We missed quite a few.
Quite a few, yeah. So if you're just catching up to the program for some reason, whatever it is, and you still want to get out there and be heard, tell us about your winery or what you're offering in the industry, then let us know, and we'll get you on the program. It's really easy. We call you, so you don't have to make a long-distance call to wherever country it is that you're calling, but we call you. We will get in touch with you. And if you are out of the country, we have Skype, so we can also Skype connect to you and get you on the program that way. So contact us, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And we will see you all next Thursday, which will be June 27th, right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S. And for the next show. So thanks a lot again. Thank you again to Doug for being on the program. And appreciate it. And go get kicked or kick some people, whatever you do in Kung Fu. he said, well, I have my Kung Fu thing tonight. Okay.
Yeah, he does.
That was so cool. Okay.
He was funny.
That was good. We'll see you all next time. Thanks for tuning in, either in the archives or live, for those of you who stayed with us live. Appreciate it. And those in the archives, iTunes, all the other websites that we're on. And we'll see you all next time. Have a good week. And don't forget WineFest this Saturday at Florida State's Winery. We'll see you all.
Thank you all very much. Night.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101
allaboutwine@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.
This.